You know, the first stories in the 1001 Nights were written down in the 9th century, but there's a long tradition of writers who've added to them. In some ways, it's not so much a book as a living river of stories. And the most recent additions come from the celebrated novelist Salman Rushdie. Years ago, when his first son was young, he wrote a children's novel called Harun and the Magic Sea, full of genies and magic carpets and flying ships. More recently, he came out with a sequel of sorts called Luca and the Fire of Life. In an interview a few years ago, he told Jim Fleming he wrote it because his second son insisted.
Yes, he more or less did. I mean, actually, when he was born, I already had a good suspicion that I would probably at some point myself want to write a companion volume to Harun and the Sea of Stories, which I'd written for his older brother. But then when he was about, I guess, 9 and a half, 10 years old maybe, he read Harun and was fond of it, but was very clear that it had been written for his older brother, and that created an injustice in the family, which it was important that I rectify. And he began to be more and more vehement on that subject, so I had no option really but to do what he said. Everyone in Kahani was fully aware that there was a world of magic existing in parallel with our own non-magic one. And from that reality came white magic, black magic, dreams, nightmares, stories, lies, dragons, fairies, blue-bearded genies, mechanical mind-reading birds, buried treasure, music, fiction, hope, fear, the gift of eternal life, the angel of death, the angel of love, interruptions, jokes, good ideas, rotten ideas, happy endings. In fact, almost everything of any interest at all.
This is also a place that you know a great deal about. This is more or less the same magic world that Harun entered, isn't it?
Well, it's related to it, yes. I mean, if we're going to be completely topographically exact about it, the Sea of Stories exists on Earth's invisible second moon, obviously. But in this book, the torrent of words actually gushes down from the Sea of Stories to the Earth. The torrent of words, by the way, thunders down from the Sea of Stories into the Lake of Wisdom, whose waters are illumined by the dawn of days and out of which flows the River of Time. The Lake of Wisdom, as is well known, stands in the shadow of the Mountain of Knowledge, at whose summit burns the Fire of Life. This important information regarding the layout and, in fact, the very existence of the magical world was kept hidden for thousands of years, guarded by mysterious, cloaked spoilsports who called themselves the Alim, or Learned One. I mean, I think it's one of the things you have to do. When you're creating an imaginary world, you do have to know how it looks. And I think the more precise you are about that, the more realistic and believable you can make that world feel. So yeah, I had a map of my imaginary world in my head.
But you also have a son who has grown up with video games, and there is that kind of world. What do you call them? At some point you say that they are like pocket universes.
Yes, miniature alternative realities that you can carry around in your pocket and then just plunge into. Once upon a time, we used to call those books. But, you know, now. But what I thought was helpful was the video game, or certain kind of video game, is structured very similarly to the quest narrative. The so-called levels of the video game correspond quite well to the stages of the hero on the quest, you know, even from Pilgrim's Progress onwards. You know, it's not often you can use the words Pilgrim's Progress and Super Mario in the same sentence. And then, of course, the quest story itself, the way in which quests work, whether it's for the Holy Grail or whether it's Beowulf defeating the monster Grendel and then the monster's mother and so on. There's a structure there which is a very helpful shape. Of course, Luca knew all about the world of magic. He had grown up hearing about it from his father every day, and he had believed in it. He had even drawn maps and painted pictures of it, the torrent of words flowing into the Lake of Wisdom, the Mountain of Knowledge, and the Fire of Life. All that stuff. But he hadn't believed in it in the way that he believed in dining tables or streets or stomach upsets. It hadn't been real in the way that love was real or unhappiness or fear. It was only real in the way that stories were real while you were reading them, or heat mirages before you got too close to them, or dreams while you were dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's a mistake to believe that the real world is devoid of magic. For instance, one of the things that artists have always believed is that we get dulled by just habituation, by the dailiness of life. We cease to perceive the world as wonderful, whereas actually the world is filled with daily wonders, you know, and one of the things that art can do, I think, is to restore our sense of how wonderful the world in which we live really is. So that's one thing. And I mean, the other thing is, I think the world of the imagination has always been very closely related to what we might call the real world. Everything has to be imagined before it comes into being. You know, somebody has to imagine a radio transmitter before we can have this conversation. You have to imagine the wheel before you can make the wheel. You have to imagine the hyperlink before you can have the World Wide Web. So things constantly move across that border from the imagined world into the real.
Luca, at some point in the book, tells one of the ancient gods, and I think this is a quote, it's only through stories that you can get out into the real world and have some sort of power again.
Exactly. I mean, that's, of course, the sad fate of discarded gods. I mean, I have some fun with it in the book, that you have these deities who were once, you know, supreme deities, Zeus, Ra, all these people who the world lived in fear and trembling, you know, beneath their power. And then they suddenly get discarded. And now they end up in some kind of theme park or retirement home for ex-gods. It's a sad fate.
Can stories really make things possible? I mean, most of us live lives in which we pay mortgages, we pay car loans. You lived in hiding for a decade from death threats, and yet you've managed to hold on to this sense of enchantment, to this the glory of storytelling. That has to be hard sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, writing is hard. I remember when my sister tried to write a cookbook and she kept complaining about how hard it was. And I said, well, yes, it is hard. Nobody said it wasn't, you know. Well, I think two things. First of all, that you're right that there is a real world which is not like this enchanted world. And I think in Luca and the Fire of Life, Luca's mother, Soraya, is the one with her feet on the ground who keeps mentioning that. You know, she keeps saying that, you know, really it's more important to do your math homework than to be great at a video game. And that in the real world, as she says, there are no levels, there are only difficulties. You know, no matter how good you are at the world of magic, at the world of imagination and play, you actually do have to face the difficulties of the real world. So I think that's true. But it's also true, I think, that we are creatures who live by stories. You know, human beings always have. And it's very close to the heart of our nature. As somebody says in the book, you know, man alone is the storytelling animal. Nobody else does it. And so, yes, you have to balance those two. But there's no doubt the real world exists. And that's, you know, in a way, the given of this book is that death really exists. You know, and this boy, Luca, realizes that his father, who only has one life, not the 1,001 lives that you can collect in a video game and spend with great profligacy, the person who matters most to him only has one life, and that life is ebbing away, and he has to try and save it. So again, there, you know, there's a deliberate attempt in the novel to contrast the world of the game in which life is cheap and plentiful and can be replenished with the real world in which life is dear and valuable, and there's only one of it and it can't be replenished. So that contrast is very much at the heart of the book between the real and the fantastic.
Salman Rushdie talking with Jim Fleming about his children's novel, Luca and the Fire of Life.